Let's turn then back to Psalm 36 this morning. I guess if you wanted a text about which we'll spin the sermon, it would be perhaps that lovely verse 7. How precious is your loving kindness, O God. How precious is your loving kindness, O God. One of the things that we very often pray for Bruce Rossington, as he is there involved with the work of Africa Inland Mission, as he is involved in translating the scriptures into the tongues of different tribal groups, is how difficult it is sometimes to translate a word. Sometimes there's no obvious translation. Sometimes words have to be translated with all sorts of other words. I suppose we could think about it even here in Wales. Welsh people very often talk about hiraeth, don't they? That sense of homesickness, that sense of longing for a land, longing to be back in Wales. It's a Welsh word that people struggle to translate into English. And there are Hebrew words like that as well. The word that we're focusing on this morning is a Hebrew word, which is chesed. If you wanted to spell it, it would be C-H-E-S-E-D. And it's a lovely Hebrew word that's translated in different ways, even in the psalm. Now, I gave you a clue at the beginning of the service saying we were going to think about God's loving kindness. And perhaps this morning, as we read Psalm 36, you were looking out for loving kindness. And if you were, you'll have spotted the word in verse 7, how precious is your loving kindness, O God. And then you would have spotted the word in verse 10, oh, continue your loving kindness to those who know you. But the same Hebrew word, that word chesed, is there in verse 5. Your mercy, it's translated there as mercy. You see, chesed, the Hebrew word, means mercy. It means grace. It means compassion. It means love. It means kindness. All of those words. And in different places in the Psalms and in other parts of the Old Testament, it's translated in different ways. But we could really translate verse 5 as your loving kindness, O Lord, your mercy, your grace, your compassion. And this psalm is about the loving kindness of God, particularly in terms of how God deals with us in our sin. So I want us to notice three things this morning about God's loving kindness. First of all, why we need God's loving kindness. Why it's absolutely essential for us that God is a God of loving kindness to us. Then to notice the preciousness of that loving kindness, and then to see how the psalmist prays for God's loving kindness. So our need of God's loving kindness, the preciousness of it, and a prayer for it. And in a sense, we're going to look at those three verses where that word chesed is. So first of all, why do we need God's loving kindness? Why are we lost and hopeless without the loving kindness of God? Well, the answer is because we're sinners. And sin is serious. And sin is all-consuming. And sin affects every part of our lives. And it is serious in the sight of a holy God. If you've got a Bible like mine, there's a title given to the psalm. In my Bible, it's often in italics. It's not part of the original text, but it just gives you an idea about what the psalm is like. In my Bible, it says, man's wickedness and God's perfections. The psalm, in a sense, begins and ends with the wickedness of men and women. But just remember that when we're talking about the wickedness of men and women, we're not just talking about men and women out there. We're not just talking about other people here in the church this morning. We're talking about ourselves. We're talking about where we begin. We're talking about what we are like by nature. Now, no doubt, this psalm, David wrote this psalm in a particular situation when he was surrounded by the wickedness of people all around him. Many of the psalms come from such situations. But David also knows, as he will say when he comes to the end of the psalm, that he has to be aware of that wickedness. And of course, there are other psalms, aren't there, that flow from the awareness of his sin. We could just turn the page back to Psalm 32, one of those psalms that he wrote, it seems, when he realized the sin that he had committed with Bathsheba, that 2 Samuel 11 records for us in all its awful detail. But you notice how Psalm 36 begins. An oracle within my heart concerning the transgression of the wicked. There is no fear of God before his eyes, for he flatters himself in his own eyes. When he finds out his iniquity and when he hates, the words of his mouth are wickedness and deceit. He has ceased to be wise and to do good. He devises wickedness on his bed. He sets himself in a way that is not good. He does not abhor evil. Now, you notice how all-consuming sin is there. It speaks about what we look at. You see it there? And there is no fear of God before his eyes. He flatters himself in his own eyes. You see how he talks about the words of his mouth in verse 3. That they are wickedness and deceit. He has ceased to be wise and to do good. So it's not just our eyes, it's not just our words, it's about our actions and it's about our foolishness. Cease to be wise, foolishness and sin very often tied together, aren't they? You look at verse 4. He devises wickedness on his bed. So here's a picture of a man whose intentions and whose thought processes are covered by sin as well. So it's not just eyes, it's not just mouth, it's not just actions, it's his thought processes. He sets himself in a way that is not good. He does not abhor evil. That's what men and women are like by nature. That's what you and I are like by nature. That's the sort of people that we are, but for the grace of God. That's why Christ had to come. That's why Jesus had to come as the propitiation, the atoning sacrifice for our sins. Ultimately, as we read from 1 John chapter 4, the greatest evidence, the most wonderful manifestation of God's loving kindness to us is Jesus. Is the cross, is Calvary, is the gospel, is our hope of salvation that's found in Jesus. Because you and I are sinners through and through. Now, when you think about it, the question then is, well, why should God be loving kind, show loving kindness to us? Why should he be merciful? Why should he be gracious? Why should he be compassionate? Well, what is God like? Well, you see it there in verse 5 and verse 6. He's the complete opposite to us, isn't he? Here is a God who is righteous. Your righteousness is like the great mountains. That's a picture that's often used in the psalm, isn't it? We've seen great mountains, haven't we? We can look out the window here this morning. We can see a mountain. And it's a fairly small mountain, isn't it? It's big enough. If you try to go up it, try to climb it, it's big enough. But then, of course, you could go up to the Beacons. You go to the Black Mountains, and they're even bigger, aren't they? Or you could go up to North Wales, to Snowdonia, and they're even bigger there, aren't they? Or you could go up to Scotland, and you could go to Ben Nevis, and you could see the mountains there, and they're even bigger, aren't they? Or you could go across the continent. You could go to the Alps, couldn't you? And you see the mountains there, and they're even bigger. Or you could go across to India and to Nepal and to China, and you could see that wonderful Himalaya range and how big and grand and glorious they are. And the psalmist, who never saw any of those mountains, but he saw Mount Hermon, perhaps. He saw Mount Sinai, maybe. what does he say about God? God's righteousness is like the great mountains. See, that's the God that we have to deal with. And we're sinners. We're sinners through and through. Every part of our humanity is warped by sin, the psalmist says. But there in the middle of that discussion is the thought that God's mercy is like the heavens. His loving kindness is the heavens. It's like the heavens. That's great, isn't it? Because there's only one thing that's higher than the mountains, isn't there? Only one thing that's greater than the mountains. And that's the heavens. God's loving kindness. God's mercy. God's grace. God's compassion. God's chesed is like the skies. Is like the heavens. And his faithfulness reaches to the clouds. Isn't that glorious? Isn't that our great hope? Isn't that wonderful? Why do you need a loving kindness God? Why do you need a God who is so full of loving kindness? Because we're sinners. That's why Christ came. That's why you have to believe in Christ. That's why you have to trust in him. That's why your only hope has to be in the fact that he shed his blood for you and for me so that we might be saved. That's the loving kindness of our God, isn't it? We sang about it, didn't we? He saw me ruined in the fall, yet loved me, notwithstanding all. He saved me from my lost estate. His loving kindness, oh how great. Can you sing that? Could you sing that this morning from your heart? Was it just words to you this morning? Or did you know it deep within you? We need the loving kindness of our God. So, why do we need his loving kindness? Because we're sinners. But then notice the second thing about this loving kindness is that it is precious. How precious is your loving kindness, O God? The seventh verse says, doesn't it? And then it gives us this lovely picture, doesn't it? In verse 7. Therefore, the children of men put their trust under the shadow of your wings. Isn't that a lovely picture? You know what that's a picture of, don't you? It's a picture of a mother bird, isn't it? It's a picture of perhaps a hen. It's a picture of a drawn from creation, isn't it? As so many of the Psalms illustrations are. And it's that lovely picture, isn't it, of the little chicks perhaps coming and sheltering under the protective wing of a mother. The children of men put their trust under the shadow of your wings. Isn't that lovely? To be under the shadow of God's wings. Sometimes we live our lives under all sorts of shadows, don't we? Some of us here this morning are living our lives under the shadow of cancer. But remember, we're under the shadow of his wings. Some of us are living our lives under other shadows. They might be illnesses. They might be serious illnesses. There might be other problems in our life. And whatever else is going on in our life, there seems to be the shadow over us, doesn't there? But never forget that if you're a Christian this morning, you're under the shadow of his wings. You're under the shadow of his loving kindness. And that loving kindness covers us all our lives, doesn't it? That lovely hymn that we sang this morning reminds us of that, doesn't it? Though numerous hosts of mighty foes, though earth and hell my way oppose, they're shadows, aren't they? He safely leads my soul along, his loving kindness. Oh, how strong. When trouble, like a gloomy cloud, has gathered thick and thundered loud, he near my soul has some... No, no. He near my soul has always stood. Not sometimes, but always. His loving kindness. Oh, how good. This is a lovely hymn. We sang seven verses this morning. Do you know, you can look it up. And Samuel Medley, when he wrote that hymn, he wrote at least 12 verses. The editors of our hymn book took pity on us. Because we struggle to stand to sing 12 verses, don't we, these days? Let me read some of the other verses that are not in our hymn book. They're lovely verses. When I was Satan's easy prey and deep in debt and bondage lay, He paid his life for my discharge. His loving kindness is so large. When earthly friends forsake me quite, and I have neither skill or might, he's sure my helper to appear. His loving kindness is so near. Isn't that a lovely verse? We've all been through those experiences, haven't we? Where our friends let us down and they forsake us and they turn away from us and they betray us. But he's sure my helper to appear. His loving kindness is so near. In the hymn that we sang, he goes on to say, doesn't he? Soon shall I pass the gloomy veil. Soon all my mortal powers must fail. O may my last expiring breath his loving kindness sing in death. Then let me mount and soar away to the bright world of endless day and sing with rapture and surprise his loving kindness in the skies. But in the original, there's two more verses after that. Let me read them to you as well. There with their golden harps I'll join, and with their anthems mingle mine, and loudly sound on every chord the loving kindness of the Lord. And when earth's rightful king shall come to take his ransomed people home, I'll sing upon that blessed shore his loving kindness evermore. Don't you wish they'd left all those verses in that hymn? We'd have quite gladly sung 11, 12 verses this morning, wouldn't we? What's the point of the hymn? What's the point of the psalm? It's to remind us, isn't it, that God's loving kindness is precious to us because it goes on. It was from before the dawn of time, and it will stretch into eternity. And however long eternity is, you and I can't get our heads around that idea, can we? We'll always have the loving kindness of the Lord to proclaim and to sing. And when we're part of the new earth, under the new heaven, that new creation, when the Lord will come again and take his ransomed people home, we will still be praising the loving kindness of God forevermore. Why? Well, verse 8 of the psalm tells us that, doesn't it? Because they are abundantly satisfied with the fullness of your house. You give them drink from the river of your pleasures. Oh, we live in a world where people are desperate, aren't they, to be satisfied. Desperate. I happened last night to be in Newport Town Centre at about 7:30, 8 o'clock. It's a long, long time since I was in Newport Town Centre that late on a Saturday evening. If you haven't done it lately, don't bother. It is the most depressing place. You see people there who are desperate for satisfaction, even at 8 o'clock in the evening. And some of them have already, verse 9 talks, doesn't it? Or verse 8 talks about drinking from the rivers of God's pleasures. Well, there were plenty of people in Newport last night at 8 o'clock who'd already been drinking quite a lot, but not from the right places. Certainly not from the fountain of life that verse 9 describes. We live in a world where people are desperate for satisfaction and they're drinking in all the wrong places. But you know, because of the precious loving kindness of our God, we're able to drink from the fountain of life and we're able to enjoy those pleasures forevermore. And even into eternity, we will go on rejoicing in the light that comes from God's light. How precious, the psalmist says, is God's loving kindness to him. Is it precious to you? Is that where your hope is? Is that what you live for? Is that what you rejoice in? Is that how it is with your soul here this morning? So why do we need God's loving kindness? Because we're sinners. Why is God's loving kindness precious? Because it satisfies us and it goes through all our lives and into eternity for us. But then notice in verse 10, the psalmist prays for God's loving kindness. Now you might think, well, why does he do that? If God's loving kindness is as you've described, if it's eternal, if it flows from his faithfulness and his mercy and his chesed, if his loving kindness is going to cover me all the days of my life and then into eternity, why? Why is he bother praying for it? It's a certainty, isn't it? Well, that's not how the promises of God work, are they? That's not how the Psalms work. The Psalms are there to encourage us to pray. God gives us promises so that we might rely upon them, and we might trust in them, and we might trust in the God who made them. And so when God makes us a promise, we then claim it in prayer, don't we? We come to God and we can say, God, this is what you've told me about your loving kindness, and I want it, and I want to rely upon it. And so when we get to verse 10, that's what he prays for, doesn't he? Oh, continue your loving kindness to those who know you and your righteousness to the upright in hearts. That's David's prayer. He's meditated upon it. He's talked about how precious it is. And he says, oh God, go on being the loving kindness, God, that you are to me. Because he knows, doesn't he? He knows that there's always a danger that he's going to sin. He knows there's always going to be a danger of him falling away, as it were, of him leaving the God that he loves. We had it in that psalm, didn't we? In that hymn this morning, often I feel my sinful heart prone from my Saviour to depart. We know that, don't we? Prone to wander, another hymn writer puts it. Lord, I feel it, prone to leave the God I love. And he rejoices in the fact that Samuel medley does, though I have him oft forgot, his loving kindness changes not. He rejoices in that. But you see here, David is aware. Verse 11, let not the foot of pride come against me. Let not the hand of the wicked drive me away. You see, he's got an enemy outside and an enemy within, just as you and I have. He knows he's got an enemy within. Danger of pride. He was a king, yes. He was God's chosen man, yes. But you and I, we might not be kings, but there's always that danger of pride, isn't there? Always a danger that we'll exalt ourselves. Got the enemy within, got the enemies without, haven't we? Let not the hand of the wicked drive me away. There the workers of iniquity have fallen. They've been cast down, not able to rise. See wickedness all around us, and there's a danger that we can fall into it ourselves. And so the psalmist is driven to pray to God. Continue your loving kindness to me. I know you're a loving kindness God. I know you're a God whose loving kindness is precious. I want it more and more. I want it to safeguard my heart. I want it to stop me becoming proud, to stop me falling away, to stop me becoming like the wicked that I see round and about me, because their end is going to be destruction. Whereas I want, through all my days, to sing the loving kindness of the Lord. My friends, are you saved here this morning because of the loving kindness of the Lord? Is that loving kindness precious to you this morning, so much so that you rejoice in it with all your hearts? Is your prayer the prayer of the psalmist? Oh, continue your loving kindness to those who fear you. Well, may that be our prayer, even as we come to the table this morning.